I'm Brian Hyatt. This is Rolling Stone Music Now. Again, Happy New Year. I'm squeezing in one last episode before the ball drops. I've got highlights for you from this year's Musicians on Musicians interviews. First up is a discussion I moderated at the first ever Rolling Stone Musicians on Musicians live event between Gucci Mane and Jon Batiste. Then we'll play you the other interview from that event, which was a sit-down between Lil Yachty and Tierra Whack, moderated by Rolling Stone's supervising producer of news video, Delisa Shannon. And finally, we'll bring you a really fun discussion between Snoop Dogg and Latto, as moderated by staff writer Andre G. But let's get right into that meeting between Gucci Mane and Jon Batiste.
Jon, you do a lot more than jazz, but you came from the world of jazz. And jazz and hip-hop, jazz and trap, one thing they have in common is improvisation. Gucci, I think it was around the time of East Atlanta 6 when you realized freestyling in the studio was the best way to create for you. And that's become your key way of making songs. How does it work? How does that art of going in the studio with nothing and coming out with something work for you?
With me and being in the zone to make a song and just freestyle it, it's kind of like saying that time, East Atlanta Zone 6, that was like when I was 27, 28, 29 years old. Those moments in time in my youthful days, you know what I'm saying? I had a lot of energy, and it just goes along with that period of time in my life. Even now, I write my raps down, but I do it faster because I'm more deliberate when I make something. But back then, it was just like whatever I make, quick, just make it, being spontaneous. It was a challenge, and it was fun, and it was like almost trying to make something, then the next day, see what you made from the night before. That was like, they kind of start turning to be a thing, like trying to impress yourself.
Jon, how does it work for you?
A lot of times I have an idea, something that happened in life or something that somebody I met. I feel like since we've been talking, I got buku ideas already. But just, you get ideas and then you try to make them real. And then you go into the studio and I use whatever I can, whether it's the piano, drum machine, my voice, the guitar, anything that will make the vision come to life. And I also bring in people who I think will bring that vision to life. I'm always thinking like I'm making a movie, and then sometimes you have to cast the movie. They got to find the right person to play this part, right person to play that part, right bass player, drummer. All the sounds come together because I don't really like to think about it as a genre. I just like to think about it as like a vision. And then when the vision hit, you know it hit. You know it.
Jon, you also studied classical music. Was it clear to you early on that you wanted to be in something freer and more improvisational? Or was there a moment when you realized that was the world you wanted to be in?
I grew up, all of the musicians in my family, self-taught street musicians, a lot of people who play music just for fun. And I went to school. I was the first person to go to college in my family for music. So I felt like a fish out of water in that environment. But I stole a lot of stuff from it and put it with what I already had. And then that's when I started to build my own approach. I don't like to think about it. It has to be intuitive. But I do learn from classical and learn from all the things that I've studied.
Gucci, going back, you did a thing, and maybe you still do it, where you'd be writing so fast that you would rap over beats that weren't really beats. They were maybe just a kick and snare. The producers would have to catch up with you later and make the beat around you, which is the opposite of how much most hip-hop is made. Almost all hip-hop is made. Going against that grain, I think, made a lot of your songs more distinct, gave you your own style. And Jon, like you said, you've always had a fish out of water approach, going back to, you were at Juilliard with a melodica to the point where they were like, this guy needs a therapist or something. Why is he playing a melodica? Why is he bringing this into our hallowed halls of Juilliard? And then obviously you've gone so far from jazz. So what are the sort of artistic virtues of going against the grain and doing it a way that no one else does?
Man, I don't think about it as going against the grain. I just think about it as doing me and expressing what I really believe in. And if I really believe in it, then I'll feel it. And then if I feel it, I feel like other people will feel it. That's really, I'm not thinking about, let me break a rule. I just feel like it's inspiration.
I think with me, I wasn't, you know what I'm saying, I wasn't a musician. And I came up under a producer, Zaytoven, that was my partner. And he played music in the church. And I had another friend who played in the band, the marching band that made beats. And I always felt like they were so talented, and I wish that I could learn how to make a beat, but I didn't know how to make a beat, right? So by the time I said I was going to be a rapper, it really was more of a challenge. You know what I'm saying? And even with the freestyling, it was just like shooting in the gym. I was getting my reps up, shooting 1,000 shots a day, trying to really practice to be a better rapper. You know what I'm saying? And I knew that's what I was doing. But at the same time, I was building up the confidence to say, hey, as I'm learning to be better, I'm going to put the music out and let the people judge me. Because most entertainers are like scared to be judged. They'll hold it so close to their chest. With me, I had this free spirit. I'm a rap. Some people would critique it and say it's not good or I sound this way or that way. And I just build on that and take it, you know what I'm saying, and keep going.
I wanted to ask both of you about a specific song. For Gucci, I want to go back for a minute. Can you tell us how you made Lemonade?
It's a real interesting story with Lemonade, right? My old manager, Coach K at the time, right? We in Vegas, and I used to record in Vegas at this casino called The Palms. And just so happened when I was at the studio, he used to also manage to do some business with the producer Bangladesh. And he put us together. I think Bangladesh was already out. Come to find out, Bangladesh is already in Vegas doing something else at it, like an MMA fight. But we met at the casino. He had an MMA fight. I'm there at the Palms recording. We go in. He don't even know why. He playing beats or whatever. I just make the song talking about all yellow stuff. He really didn't understand where it was at, and he didn't know where I was going with it. But it kind of, you know what I'm saying, grew on him. He took it home and put his kids on it for the hook part of it.
Right.
And then he brought it back to me, and then I made a second verse to it. So that's how that came about.
And John, I had to choose between the song that was nominated today for Record of the Year and the song that was nominated for Song of the Year. I couldn't decide which one, but let's go with Worship, which was Record of the Year nominated today.
That song was, Worship came about after a conversation. I was working with John Bellion, who's a producer, songwriter, artist himself. And we were talking about how to make something, the intro, how to make something that felt like a spaceship landing and then a robot growing a heart, like a robot becoming human.
Wow.
And whether it was some supernatural power or whatever it is, transforming the robot to a human. So that was the vision, and we started messing with sounds. And then once we had that intro, it felt like it was time to have it land somewhere. So like when it land, where did we land? So then the vision is landing in the rainforest. It's like a release, a catharsis, a spiritual, it's almost like a revival or something. That was how I wanted to start the radio broadcast, because the concept album and the album is a radio broadcast, and that's effectively the first song. So the spaceship lands and the radio broadcast starting, the robot turned to a human, and then we're in the rainforest.
It's a good answer. It's a good answer. Solid.
I take that. I like that. So dope.
I want to talk about longevity, career longevity, because you both already got that. And hip-hop, as we know, just celebrated its 50th birthday. But what that means is we're only now just starting to have, we have our first rappers in their 60s. Chuck D's in his 60s. We have rappers in their 50s. We have rappers in their 40s making incredibly relevant stuff. But that's new to hip-hop by definition. In jazz and blues, we're used to seeing 80-year-olds, 90-year-olds on stage. That's nothing. So I'm just curious how each of you see this in the decades to come. Is music a lifelong thing, or is there a point at which you're going to transition into something else?
I personally feel like we're living in the future, and a lot of people just not aware of it. You know what I'm saying? And the reason I say that about the longevity thing is because I come from the past. I come from physical copies of CDs back in when giving out mixtapes hand to hand. So artists don't even understand that you don't even have to make a physical copy. You can basically just record your ideas and put them out there and make endless amount of tapes that you want. You know what I'm saying? I've been on that kind of like wait. Soon as they started making, we can download stuff and I didn't have to be physical. I started flooding the streets with tapes. So with the longevity thing, I feel it's a race. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, not a race, it's a marathon. So you got to patiently keep putting out music and work this shit like a 9-to-5. And if you do that, then I feel like you'll have success.
Do you want to be making albums when you're 70 years old? Would that be cool?
100%. All right. 100%, because that's what the game evolved to. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got Jay-Z in his 50s and Snoop and E-40 and Nas. You know what I'm saying? All these artists are not only just making music, they're making money. You know what I'm saying? So they're giving you the blueprint for artists in their 40s and their 30s of what could be. You know what I'm saying? And that's how the game is. You keep pushing the envelope, and then you just keep pushing it.
And John, I think I know the answer. I think that you're going to be doing this till your 90 if you can.
Yeah, it's too much to figure out, too much to explore. I don't know as much as I would like to know about my own potential. So that's what keeps driving me.
I like that. I was thinking that both in your own ways, and it's true of everyone in their own ways, everyone has hard times. You both had hard times, personal hard times in your life, but you both kept creating through them. And sometimes some people create best in the face of strife. Some people don't. It's an interesting thing. How do you see that? How do you balance that thing when shit is hard in your life and it's time to make some music?
I think once I put it on my mind that I was going to leave the streets and start being a rapper, good days, bad days, every year I'm putting out music, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to be productive. I'm going to be prolific. But some of my best music has came out, and some of my most acclaimed albums was like 05, 06, and I was going through a real challenging parts of my life, 012, 013. But still I was putting out music, and then some of that music was expressing what I was going through, and those was hit records. But do I want to go through those times to make those, to please my fans? Hell no.
You'll choose the happy life if you have the choice, yeah.
Yeah, I take that. I take it.
I 100%. I echo everything Gooch just said. For real. I think hard times, it inspires you to make something that you wouldn't make if you wasn't under the pressure of that. But I also think you could make some great stuff and be super happy in your life. And I think that's a myth that I don't buy into it. I think we got to stop that myth of the tortured artist having to be so under it.
I agree with you.
John, needless to say, the Grammys love you. It's no secret that Grammys and award ceremonies are slow to recognize a genre like trap, slow to catch up with hip-hop. But how important is that institutional recognition?
The biggest blessing of recognition is when your peers respect what you do, and it feels like you add into the culture and you add into your time, your era, whatever period of time you're in. And ultimately, it's another way for the work to be recognized and for it to move people's lives and to affect people's lives. I think it's a great thing because it just elevates, if what you're doing is from a pure place, it just elevates it. And it allows for it to do what it do. And I believe in that. I think awards, making music for awards is not something that I ever did, or I wouldn't recommend doing that, whether you have them or not.
You both done some acting, Gucci Spring Breakers. I don't even know what to say. What are music and acting, what skills transfer back and forth, and what do you learn from one to the other that might be helpful?
But still using your words and your voice, so you still remember your script and staying in character, and still being punctual, being on time. There's a lot of people involved. It's a teamwork thing that make it happen. It's got a lot of things just like being in the studio.
Is it really true that during a certain scene in Spring Breakers, you were falling asleep and had to be woken up?
I was full of that lean.
I agree. It's discipline. Just showing up, doing your thing, and also being yourself. Finding your own voice in it, because there's a script, and once you learn that, once you learn how to hit the lights right and the marks and just get comfortable, then that's when you could discover some stuff. That's my favorite part. Once you get past that initial learning and the discipline of being there and working on it, then you start discovering stuff. And that's like music.
I think you said with Spike Lee, you were struck by his discipline and his precision.
Oh, man. Oof. That was, Spike is like a military drill sergeant. He gets the most out of that crew and the actors. It was my first experience being on the set with Spike. This is back. I was maybe just even thinking about doing something like that because I'd done some stuff with Treme on HBO, the David Simon show. But that was, doing a movie is different. You got to wait a lot. And then you got to be on when it's time to hit.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be. And with Spike, you don't want to not be ready. So that was interesting and great for my first one. It was like a trial by fire.
John, you obviously have deep New Orleans roots. And Gucci, you were raised in Alabama before you moved to Atlanta. There's so many great American musicians from the South. What is it musically about the South?
To me, it's the parents. It's your grandparents. It's your aunts and uncles. And it's just passed down. It's what they listen to. You know what I'm saying? It's all the musicians, it's the church, you know what I'm saying? It's all that.
Yeah, wow. I love how you say it's the parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles. It's something about that. It's just life. That's what's coming through the music. the way we live in the South is very different, especially now that we've traveled different places, and nothing is like going back. Nothing feels like that. So I think we channel feelings. We channel all that. And then if you do that, imagine for generations and generations, and the lineage is, it just builds on itself. By the time you get to us, it's almost like a its own institution. You don't got to go to music school to get that. You just live that, and you got something to sing about.
Gucci, in your book, you said that, at least I think in your 20s, when you'd go back to Alabama, it would drive you crazy. It was way too slow and country for you. And now, at this point, are you able to go back and relive a little bit of your childhood and appreciate it, or is it still too slow and country for you?
That's a great question. And to give you a sincere, honest answer, I have mixed feelings when I go back to my hometown of Bessemer, Alabama, because it's not a lot of opportunity there, you know what I'm saying? And I don't even want to say things too harshly about it, because both sides of my family's there, and I'm one of them people, if I don't see opportunity, maybe I get that from my mom, that I'll leave the town. You know what I'm saying? If it ain't no jobs here, then I just go uproot and move somewhere else. I got this kind of like nomadic approach to life. So though I say I don't want to disrespect my family because I love them and that's my always be my home, but to me, I'm a 49. I'm going with a goal.
To stick with the childhood thing, you both in your ways had really early exposure to music. John, obviously you're from a musical dynasty, so it just was around you. I can't even imagine. And Gucci, you went to concerts as early as 6 years old. You talked about it. You saw, I think, LL and the Beastie Boys and Run DMC at 6 years old, and you went to a bunch of shows, and so that was really early exposure. I wonder if you could talk about both of you about that sort of early musical exposure, who your earliest music heroes were.
It's easy for me because I had an older brother. My musical influence was always whatever he thought was cool early on, you know what I'm saying? In Alabama, it was LL Cool J and Dougie Fresh and Slick Rick, you know what I'm saying? Cool Moe D and Salt and Pepper, you know what I'm saying? But as we moved to Atlanta and grew up, it started being 8-Ball and them, JG, the Hard Boys, Ghetto Mafia, you know what I'm saying? Kilo Ali, like a lot of just whatever was at the times, you know what I'm saying? And I always wanted to be that kid in school who knew about stuff before the other kids did. So it's, oh, y'all listen to that. Y'all listen to MC Hammer. I'm listening to Scarface, you know what I'm saying, or something, or the Ghetto Boys, you know what I'm saying? I wanted to always be like, I know, there's always people trade cars or whatever. That's how I used to feel like when I used to be able to get my brother cassette tapes and know about them. I can go over talk to other kids who had older brothers. It's like we had something we knew about. So it always been this thing about rap is cool, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I listened to it. As far as rap music in New Orleans, there was the real movement of Master P and the Hot Boys eventually by the year 2000, Juvie, Manny, Wayne, and that was just ubiquitous. That sound was like basketball games, out of car windows, cookouts, in any dance you ever go to. And so that would be happening. As I said, I grew up between 17 Water, New Orleans, and Holly Grove, and also in Kenner, Louisiana, which is like kind of provincial, suburb, country. It's like it's almost rural. When I was there, I was playing video games, and the music from the video games was actually some of my early influences. Apart from my family, my dad, Alvin Batiste, Ellis Marcellus family, the Nevilles, Henry Butler, like all the musicians, I heard that, but I started playing music very late, actually. I didn't start playing the piano till I was about 12 or 13 years old. So before that, I was just a kid listening to what was on the radio, listening to video games. I realized I had a good ear because I would remember the themes from the game and I'd be able to play them on the piano, just dabbling, not like really, but I would hear it and I'd be like, oh, I could change this note and change that note. Then that started to become composing music. And so the combination of the video games, avant-garde jazz musicians in New Orleans, funk musicians, and the Hot Boys and Master P and Mystical, that was my early influences.
Yeah, I remember hearing when you went to Tokyo for the first time, you were like, this is where the video game music comes from.
Man, oh, man. Woo! Bruh, Japan, crazy. I loved it. I loved it so much because that's very nostalgic. That's the music that I grew up with in a way. I wrote letters to them composers. Yoko Shimomura, Nobu Uematsu, all them people that wrote those themes. I went to meet them.
Thanks again to Gucci Mane and John Batiste. And here's Lil Yachty with Tierra Whack, which again was moderated by Rolling Stone's supervising producer of news video, Delisa Shannon.
So I want to know about maybe a piece of art that transformed the way that you view your creative lens.
For me, it's Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. That was the first time I heard that album. It altered my perspective on music in its entirety. And just the way that, as creators, is, I just felt like after hearing that album, it sunk into my brain that we have been so limited with our content compared to the things that we are able to do. I feel like in hip hop, but just in music in general, I feel like we just do what the recipe is. You know what I'm saying? But man, there is endless ways to form a sonic wave. And hearing that album and just doing deep research on it and then realizing that when there was no auto-tune or no Pro Tools or no Fruity Loops, this is all hardware. You know what I'm saying? Like, these niggas is old. I realized that through the years of why we got all this great, amazing, advanced technology, I feel like my personal opinion is that it handicapped us as creators. And it made us very limited because we got all these artificial intelligence. And I'm victim to it too. But back then you had to just, all you had was your brain and your skills. You know what I'm saying? I got really obsessed with watching old artists live performance videos. Like, I just think about, man, them niggas had no in-ears. I could never do that with no in-ears. And they was on key, in tune, in arenas. I'm talking about it's all kind of reverb and like just, that's real talent. You know what I'm saying?
They rehearsed like all the time.
And the speakers, the technology was nothing like what we have in today's time. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was just raw talent. You know what I'm saying? And they, obviously, I'm sure the effort put towards the craft is the times more. I'm getting off topic.
No, I'm following you. I'm thinking about Busta Rhymes' Gimme Some Mo'. That video, crazy. It makes you feel like it's slow-mo but fast-paced at the same time, and it just puts you in a trance. And you spoke on performances. Like, I used to watch all of Busta's live performances because that's the reason I get so animated. I get so crazy because people feel that. And you just got to be over the top and just turn it up. So definitely I got to give a lot of credit to how I perform to Busta Rhymes. So yeah.
Are there any artists that you can think of right now when we're thinking about their whole career that you think of when you think about true creative evolution?
Tyler. But I don't want to be Tyler. I pull a lot of inspiration from his just how he hones in and like he caters. And when he starts his era, he's in that era till it ends.
And he takes us through each era. Like, absolutely. I feel like whatever he's on, I'm on it.
From
like,
start to finish.
We're growing with him. Yeah. And we just grow with him. And we just accept him as a human, but he's an artist too. And I think Tyler is that's the perfect answer.
That kind of leads me into TD, which is one of my favorite songs off Lobo 3.
Yeah.
And I want us to just hear the instrumental, just in case you didn't know, because the sample already is crazy. Thank you.
One of the hardest beats ever. Yo, I listened to this beat like 30 times before I even said anything. I was like, oh my God, I gotta kill this shit. Oh my God.
Yeah, she fucking bodied us on that track. Crazy.
Yeah.
I wanted it to. That's why I put her on it.
No, I still have the text messages of him saying, please kill all of us. And I was like, okay.
Absolutely. Because I've always been like one of her biggest fans. And I just
day
feel like,
one. I have a lot of rapper friends, but this is like my real friend. He's been there since day one. When people weren't sure about me, yo, she's weird. I'm not like, he was the one. He was posting me, showing me love, reaching out, checking on me, like the most genuine artist that I know. And I'm so happy that people are finally seeing what I saw in you also.
That's real.
You are a megastar. You're everything.
I appreciate
and
it.
Yeah, I'm just so proud and
like I was saying, I just know she's so. I was like, please, because the record was technically done, but I was like, come kill us all, and she did just that. You know what I'm saying? It was fantastic. I loved it.
So he sent a beat that we all were able to get on and do our thing, because artists will send songs around as I hear you on this, but it won't make sense. It doesn't. Sometimes it just doesn't make sense. I feel like all of us really did hold our own on that. It's so open. Like, you can do any kind of flow. It's just, you really have an ear too. He has an ear. Two ears.
So do you. We all got two ears in the bitch.
Two good ears. Really good ears.
I think you talked about competition, and I think with J. Cole specifically about certain tracks or being an artist who's featured, maybe it's to be a compliment.
You talking about on Secret Recipe?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But I'm thinking more about competition with yourself, because I think that's something that really points to where you two are right now, where it's who was I, who am I, and how can I go harder? Do you think, is that an active thing that you factor into approaching creative projects, trying to best yourself? Or does it just happen and you look back like, damn, I did that?
I just want respect. And I still, for so long, feel like yet to get it. And the older I get, the more important it is to me, because music is my life. Yeah, so like, I think all I care about is, this is what I care about most of my life. And I feel as that a lot of people may have not taken me serious for different reasons. Maybe because of the era I came in, or maybe because I had red hair and was a kid, or...
Hey!
I'm talking about at the time, like 2016, like...
These red hair is so old news.
Nah, I completely forgot you got red hair.
Bringing it back.
But I don't know what it is that, but I just feel like people always looked at or treated me like a kid, like some like kids bop rapper or some shit. I don't know, but I really do this shit. You know what I'm saying? And even if I don't, I was always the kid that, okay, cool, you think this trash? I'm gonna go fix it. I'm gonna go work on it. I'm gonna get better, and I'm gonna come back. What about this? But this one ain't. I bet. Hold on. You know what I'm saying? Practice that Allen Iverson post interview. For real though, I study this shit. I really study music, man. This shit is like everything from interviews to fucking concerts to fucking merch. I study this shit. But just to be fairly honest, it wasn't until I got a little older that it wasn't until I fell in love with that Dark Side of the Moon album that I completely changed my perspective on creating music and creating albums in a whole. As I felt that, oh man, bringing back that experience is important.
It's hard to follow. You just, okay. Wait, I think I know the question. I just want to make music and art that I'm proud of. That's it. Just period. I can name Caught Out There by Khalees. I love that song. I wish I made it. If I can make a song and be like so proud of it that I can't believe that I made it, I'm good. I'm sealed. The deal is done. That's all I need. I just want to be proud of my own art.
Hell yeah. That too. I used to. No, for, let me tell you. I used to. Y'all, this is a true thing, right? I never would go outside. I never went to any events. I've never been to a fashion show. I never did any Paris Fashion Week, New York Fashion Week, and I'll tell you why. Because I would always go to events where I'd go out, and people would say to me, oh, man, Yachty, man, I love your music, bro. And I should be like, what song? Because at the time, I didn't love my music. So I'm like, so I stopped going out. I never went out because I would feel like I'm in a room with all these artists, and they all respect each other, and I feel like no one respects me because I don't have a catalog that's maybe up to par with them. So I just stopped going out. And I was like, man, I need to make an album that I respect and that people respect and that I'm proud of and I can really hold my nuts. You know what I'm saying? Really be like, yeah, I made this shit. I can go in any room and, hey, what's up? How y'all doing? And they say, man, I love what you did. I'm like, I know. You know what I'm saying?
Because I do too.
You know what I'm saying? And know it and really understand it and know they not just saying some shit. People say some shit. They be like, oh man, yeah, I fuck with your shit. You don't fuck with my shit. You just know who I am. You know what I'm saying? To be real. But I hated that feeling. I wanted to feel like, nah, I'm contributing some good shit to the world. Good art. That was my switch. It all hit me at the same time, but yeah.
Where do you think hip hop is right now, looking at this love that you two share?
It's very diverse. You can do whatever you want. You can be whoever you want. It's just freedom.
That shit sucks.
No, okay, let's dispel this.
Man, no, hold on. Let's talk about it. The place that hip-hop is in right now is a terrible place. What are we talking about?
But you're looking at it glass half
empty. No, hip-hop is hip-hop, but you asked me, where is hip-hop right now? And the state of hip-hop right now is a lot of imitation. It's a lot of quick, low-quality music being put out. It's a lot of trendy. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot less risk-taking. It's a lot less originality. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot less people taking risk. So safe. I'd rather take the risk and take the L.
I love that.
Always. But I think there are people doing that. I think you're doing that.
Hip-hop as a whole is... You just named two people. You tell us. About
who's exciting.
The artists who are really pushing the culture and trying to be original and really trying to take risk. Without naming Tyler.
Honestly, one of my favorites is Jid right now.
I love Jid. Jid is such a beautiful person. He got the spirit of a real Atlanta Negro.
True.
And he is such a good, kind person. And he was one of, I don't know, he just always embraced me with like open arms. I got nothing but respect for Jid. And he's, I've never heard a bad verse from Jid ever.
Cool.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
I want to talk about being a woman in hip hop.
Okay.
And not only being a woman in hip hop, you're a dark skinned woman in hip hop. You know? And praise to that. But I just want to talk about what comes with that. I was on a plane coming this morning. I was just thinking about. I feel like being a dark skinned woman in hip hop. It gives you certain obstacles that I think if you was like light skinned. Where's your standpoint on it? Do you feel as if niggas be playing with you? Do you feel as if...
Everybody knows I can out-rap almost anybody.
No, but I know...
Everybody know that.
I, of course, but
it's hard for me not to hold the mic like I'm ready to rap. I'm ready to... Yo, what's up, y'all? Yo, check the rhyme. But I'm trying to be a lady and be like, yeah.
But unfortunately, do you feel like a lot of the artists in hip-hop nowadays, I feel like sometimes it's not even about talent. It's not even about skill.
That's true.
Because it's 100%. I don't know what woman could rap better. I personally don't know one that could rap better than you. But it seems like, I'm saying rap better than her. I don't know one who can. But yeah, exactly. But with that, do you ever feel like something ain't adding up? Because I do.
Sometimes. But not for the most part. I think sometimes people force that on me. Like that question that you did. Yeah. I get asked that often. And, baby, the people love me. The brands, I be on everything.
Yeah.
Listen.
That's good.
They love WAC. So, I'm following your footsteps.
Yeah.
You were one of the first rappers, especially, what was that? What year XXL was that? 2016. You've got good memory. 2016. You were the best rapper on that cover, if I'm being all the way honest. You were able to keep a clean image. You weren't really promoting drugs or violence or any of that. You were literally my twin. And I'm doing the same thing as you. And I think that's why we're here. It just all makes sense. I'm just being true to myself. And I think the people who accept me and respect me, like, we just, I don't know, it just works.
Do you think not doing that, like, not talking about those things makes it, like, harder? Like, for me, I'm only asking because for me, in my career, when I was younger, right, when I was 18 and 19.
The people that I looked up to growing up, my mom is a really strong, independent woman. She's black, of course. Black, strong, independent woman. Yeah. She worked hard. She wasn't a slut. She wasn't selling her body, showing her body. I had a perfect role model, you know what I'm saying? And then, musically, Lauryn Hill was my everything. I'm just following the people I look up to. That's it.
What I was trying to say to you is that when I was 18 years old, right?
And it's like yesterday.
26. I'm 8 years ago almost. Almost 8 years ago, okay? It's been a long time. I'm still here, by the way. Yeah, exactly. They said I had one song. When I was younger and coming up to class, I had glorified drugs, face tats, everything under the book. You know what I'm saying? And what I learned as I got older is that my fan base... I'm grateful for my fan base I have. It's a huge fan base and the love is real. But I always realized that I never had the fan base of certain peers because I didn't glorify negativity. I didn't glorify just things that I didn't stand by. And so I was asked, what I was just trying to see is if you felt like that was something you, because you don't like glorify like shaking big booty. But
I could.
But I'm like saying, do you see fear. Any, did you too see any of those challenges? Or are you like, nah, not really?
No. If I'm just being myself and following my own path, I can't see anything else. I'm just focused on me and having fun and being myself.
Yeah, I love it. I was just asking.
And let me just justify. My mom is a very respectable woman. I love her so much. She's my everything. She's my hero. All I'm saying is I had a great role model growing up, and that's why I'm on this straight path.
It's so crazy, though. I feel like a lot of artists have great role models just be
That's
like,
not true.
Not all of them, but I feel like I guarantee you there's a lot of artists that make crazy songs that have good role models. By the way, I was snubbed on a Grammy nomination today. The fuck is y'all clapping
Let's talk
for?
About
I was snubbed. The fuck? Fuck y'all. I was snubbed. Y'all supposed to boo.
It's true.
Exactly.
Boo.
Yeah, man. Niggas okay, smoking well, on angel dust.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways, I think we talked about it, but I was just going to talk about not getting the credit that we deserve.
Yes.
Because I just think you are, I was going to say, it's the best.
You see how he's sharing his platform with me? I love that. People don't do that anymore. I really appreciate it.
Why are you holding the mic with two hands?
Just, I don't know. I need like a mic stand and just, I want to just start singing. I can see it in your eyes. You're angry. You will never find.
So where are you in, what's the word? Where are you in life right now?
I'm really excited and happy. I just dropped a new song, was that, and video. I'm proud of it.
First time in how long?
It's been a while. It's been a long time. Okay, yeah. I don't know how long. It's been a few years, though.
Yeah.
But it's a badass video. One take. I went through a car wash. Like, I actually went through a car wash. And I was so afraid. I had anxiety. I was like, I don't know if I can do this. But I did it. My crew was like, yo, you're the baddest woman we know. And I did it. And I'm so happy. And you guys should go watch it if you haven't already. And I love you so much.
So that was Lil Yachty with Tierra Whack. And now you'll be hearing Snoop Dogg and Latto, as moderated by staff writer Andre G.
First time, me and Rolling Stones had an encounter. It was Jimmy Iovine that was getting at me and Dr. Dre about being on the cover, right? So at the time, I'm a hip-hop artist. I'm gangster with this shit. I'm like, man, fuck the Rolling Stones. Nigga, I want to be on the motherfucking Source magazine. And Jimmy was like, no, you just don't understand that the Rolling Stones is the biggest shit ever. Mm-hmm. You guys are like Keith and Mick. I'm like, who the fuck is Keith and Mick, nigga? So I end up doing this shit, right? So the day I do it, put my shit in some pigtails, like on some stupid gangster shit. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, since y'all want me on the cover, I'm going to be a real nigga on the cover. Mm-hmm. Pigtails, G shit, take a little quick little picture. When that shit come out, a week later, my record sold 1 million more fucking copies.
No cap, he just told me this.
To a whole different demographic. I had to go tell Jimmy Iovine, I'm sorry. What other cover would you like for me to tell?
Yep, no cap, because we come from a different world. And now you got my mama, white lady from Ohio. That's my celebrity crush.
That's what the Rolling Stones did.
No
I'm
cap.
Sure she didn't discover me in no motherfucking source.
No cap. I want to tell you how I discovered you.
Something.
I told you this off camera, but you my mama's biggest celebrity, not even biggest, only celebrity crush since a kid. So I got put on to you as like my mama's celebrity crush. And then I'm like, wait, hold on. This a whole ass legend. Wait, hold on, ma. What you know?
Mama put you up on the dog.
You feel me? Mama put me up on it. For
that's
sure.
Gangsta shit right
mama
there.
Mama put me up
you
on
You gotta love it. Shout out to Misty.
Yeah, mama, Misty. Misty. You know and then is. My daddy was like, hold on, let me put you down. My daddy like a hip hop head.
Right.
And he loved, oddly enough, he loved West Coast. He from Ohio, so maybe like Midwest.
That's Midwest, yeah.
Yeah, West Coast, they be like. But yeah, he put me down.
So he listened to it too?
Yeah, hell yeah. Hell
that's
yeah.
Sheesh. So you was groomed in this hip hop.
A-Pop, them like his like, yeah.
The GOATs.
Mm, his GOATs, for sure, them his GOATs. That's
so
how I got put on them.
I got put up on you.
Yeah.
It was Greg Street.
Greg, that's so, my dog.
I had heard.
It's 6 o'clock.
Yeah,
it's
exactly,
time for Greg Street
exactly,
to rock.
Exactly. And Greg Street was like, he was like, man, I've been knowing her since she was a little kid. She performing talent shows. And he like, man, she been a star. Mm. And so I started discovering your music. And I was like, I like your style.
I appreciate it.
I like your approach. Just like that mm-hmm. shit is fly. When you telling me your dad and your mama raised you on this shit, I mean, it's.
Yeah, you feel me?
It's not on you. It's in you.
It's in me.
Straight
it's
up.
In me.
It's in your DNA.
It's in my DNA.
Say that.
My favorite things is like full circle moments like this. Mm. Like me being able to reconnect stuff to my childhood right. that make me feel like accomplished. And then being able to spoil my family. That's, yeah.
Well, let me give you one of my secrets. One of my secrets is that I remain the biggest kid in the room at all times.
You know what you was telling me before the camera was on? You was like, have fun. Just have fun.
That's the kid in you. Because the kid in you can't believe that. Look at where you at. Look at
oh,
what
God.
You're doing. So continue to be that kid so you can keep making it about fun.
Yeah. And somebody told me, they was like, whenever you're not having fun no more, stop it. You got to figure out what's stopping your fun. Stop it, take a chill break, and figure out what you got to change because you're supposed to have fun. We blessed to be able to do a job that's like fun. I'm feeding my family off of like having fun.
It's two funds that's the most important funds in the world. Funds that you make off of the fun that you have.
funds. If you could go back and change anything that you did, what would you change?
Honestly, I've been asked that question probably about 50 times, and the answer is always the same. I wouldn't change a motherfucking thing.
Really?
I love it the way it is.
Yeah.
The good times, because it's all about you. Your story. All that shit, it made me who I am. It sculpted me to the man that I became. You know?
See, I'm in my head. I'm like, oh, I wish I would have did this. I wish I would have. I need to like more just bask in the moment and just appreciate
it. You didn't get what you got with that attitude.
Like, once you hit a new level, it just be new level, new devil.
I say it to you like this. If you're doing what you're supposed to do, niggas supposed to hate.
Yeah.
That's just come with the territory. Mm-hmm. And when you ain't doing shit, you have nothing to hate on. Mm-hmm. But the hate should inspire you to do great.
Yeah, it means you're doing something.
And the only way you could beat hate is with love. Mm-hmm. Match that energy and try to, I'm going to hate you back. No. Mm-hmm. I'm going to show you some love. I'm going to show you how I do what I do. That's how I've been able to prevail for 30 years in this music industry. Because the times where I've been approached with hate and negativity, sometimes I dealt with it on some gangster shit.
Uh-huh. And sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
I was able a couple of times. But the business was more important. It wasn't personal. But nowadays, it's more like talent isn't involved anymore. They move moving talent out the way because it's overnight successes that they can make. Mm-hmm. That's why when you really do have talent, you should hone your talent. You should be great. You should study the greats before you to see how you can stay here for a long time. Because you've been around for a while before you was making records. Mm-hmm. What happened to your favorite rappers in the
90s? How you know that?
What happened to your favorite rappers in the 90s? Where they at? Most of them. I'm probably the only one that's still around.
Yeah.
But I'm saying it's because of the things that they did or the business opportunities that they didn't capitalize. Mm-hmm. So you got to be a smarter businesswoman and say, okay, the women are winning right now in the music industry. This is a first for the women to be the foreground.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that too. Like, how you feel about that? Because I know that wasn't the same thing. My era is females is
the first era to actually dominate.
Am I wrong?
You're correct. But to me, it's you guys have to understand that here's where the bullshit comes in. Mm-hmm. They gonna make y'all fight each other now. Because that's what they made us do. Mm-hmm. They didn't want us to join hands and say, hey, East Coast, West Coast, down South.
It's too powerful.
I love your music. You from the South. I don't give a fuck if I ain't from there. I love your shit. Well, I gotta hate you because you from down there. That's what they'll put into y'all Kool-Aid.
And we fought for it. We fought for the trap. I ain't
gonna
lie.
Somebody gotta be sharp enough to say, you know what? It's a business.
People don't know that. This not like a trend for me. I ain't just like, oh, I wanna wake up and rap. I've been rapping since I was 8 years old. Like full blown, like getting picked up from school, doing my homework in the studio lobby, passing out mixtapes, like give me $5, like finesse with me and Pops. It's really like a growing process for me. So like right now I'm in a mode where I got the mic in the room, not in the booth. I got it in
like
the room.
With everybody.
With everybody. I wanna be with everybody. I'm like, y'all fuck with that. If I say this, you know what that mean? Like I might FaceTime my sister. If I say this, do you get what I'm saying? So I'm in like a very like I'm taking opinions and I want to just go in there and have fun. Like I be sitting right there talking, drinking, smoking, and I just hit the mic, like just step right to the mic and just let it all out right there. I be going through my little motions though. How you be?
When I started, we didn't have no studio. We had fucking rooms.
Yeah.
Whoever had a closet.
Oh, God. My first recording experience was in a closet. I was recording my daddy partner closet. Oh, God. Oh, God.
So I've learned to adapt to any environment. So, like, let me give you this, for example. At my studio, I got a room called the Mothership. It's like a spaceship.
Okay.
I like it real dark and moody. But when I go work with Dr. Dre, this nigga got a microphone right here, everybody in here, like you just said, I want to be challenged because I've done so much, and I've, you know, recreated myself so many different times.
That you have.
Yes, what challenge am I up to now to produce me, make me better, to where I don't have to think of everything or say everything, but just sit back and let you produce me.
Yeah, I'm getting into that now too. I'm like building my little team, my comfort zone, like people who bring out the best work of me.
Your inner circle, you're supposed to always have people around you better than you.
Man, what?
So that way you can continue to get
better. I'm learning the importance of that now too.
And everybody's field, they should be the best. I seen your glam squad. Let me get him a shout out. Got your shit on. That's one of the steps to being a superstar.
You got to let me know what your favorite memories is or like your best just experience, like with your first around your first breakout, first album, first show, first everything.
I had just did the Chronic with Dr. Dre, right? So that was his record, but it was like the biggest record in the world.
Yeah.
So everybody was waiting on my shit. So for me to be able to go to the studio and do it, and then he brought LL Cool J in one day to hear one of the songs, and it fucked me up because I was like,
LL Cool J is the greatest motherfucking rapper in the world. Yeah. He out here listening to my shit, yeah, and he liked it. Mm-hmm. So that was like a moment for me. And then just being able to like have my own record. Mm-hmm. As a kid, I dreamed of having a fucking record with me on it from mm-hmm. top to bottom, doing the skits, the rapping, mm-hmm. the talking, this. And just to be able to do it with my family, I had cousins, I had my homeboys, I had Dr. Dre, I had my best friends. It was just the best feeling in the world. The niggas that I started with, mm-hmm. that when I didn't know how to rap good, I started off as a songwriter.
For real?
Yeah, writing for Dr. Dre and writing for myself mm-hmm. on the Chronic album. Deep Cover was the first song that I wrote. And then G-Thang, Dre Day, and on and yeah, on. But it was like being a writer first. Mm-hmm. I want you to win. You the star. And then it was like, shit, it's your turn for your album. Mm-hmm. So it immediately turned from me writing for someone else to I gotta write for myself better than I wrote for him. Mm-hmm. But the level that I wrote for him is so fucking high, I'm gonna really have to do what
put
I do.
In the work.
Yeah. I went on a mission like, what kind of songs have never been written before? What kind of songs in hip hop have never been remade? I was the first mm-hmm. rapper to actually remake another rapper's song, mm-hmm. Lottie Dottie with mm-hmm. Rick and Doug Fresh. Remade that. Put that on my record. Then Dr. Dre was bringing in instrumentation. It was a lot. Like, I listened to 70s music. So I'm like, I want funk in my shit. I yeah. love Players and Pimp movies.
Yeah.
So I want all of that shit in my shit. And it was all a part of me. I have to write this so you can see what I want projected. Mm-hmm. So give me your first album.
Okay, my first album. My first album was me. I'm not gonna lie, it was a little different for me. I'm like, I'm what, 20? 21 maybe? Figuring it out. Like, I'm like, okay, boom, just signed my first major deal in the midst of pandemic and stuff too. Mm. So that was like crazy. I'm recording a debut album and the studio saying, oh, only two people can be in the room. And I'm like, shit, that's me and the producer. What about my yeah, sister, my people? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So in the midst of all that, choosing beats without the producers being there because it ain't enough room, capacity, they like tripping, whatever. It was fun, but it was a lot of restrictions. Beauty in the process, I guess. I'm learning like the importance of energy and just feeling like you that girl. So when you get in that booth, the confidence is just breathing through the mute. Man,
we
what?
Can hear it. We can feel it. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to feel how confident mm-hmm. is when you speak. Mm-hmm. Real shit.
You got one favorite studio session?
One that stand out to me is when me, Pharrell, and Stevie Wonder was in the studio.
Sheesh. And, I ain't met Stevie, but I met P, and he P.
Oh, you know I smoke. How we smoke?
Yeah.
We're smoking. We in a little ass room. Mm-hmm. Stevie Wonder come. Pharrell sitting next to me. He said he didn't got high. He got a secondhand smoke.
Yeah.
Now Stevie in the booth. So he in there. I'm like, whoa. And Pharrell ain't saying shit.
Yeah.
So Stevie and that motherfucker like trying to figure out what to do. So
yeah.
I'm like, Pharrell, produce this nigga.
And he, yeah.
I'm like, nigga, he produce stuck. This nigga. This nigga's so high. He leaves Stevie what to do and don't give him no direction.
He's stuck.
And I'm trying to tell Stevie what to do. I don't know.
He's what the fuck stuck. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
I told the nigga, just play anything.
Yeah.
When we finished, Pharrell took all of the good shit that he played, cause the harmonica, singing mm-hmm. shit, and it ended up working. But it was like funny to me that this nigga been around me this long.
Yeah.
Today he finally gets so high. They leave.
He done left.
They left the nigga in there where he had to walk out by himself.
Stop playing. Stop playing. That's what's up. Y'all ain't had no camera in there?
Hell.
Oh, man. Y'all supposed to have
right
a camera.
Here.
Yeah. Oh Lord, P Player. I did a session, a week of sessions with him in Miami, and I just kept telling him like, "What made you want to fuck with me? I got the call. You want me to come to Miami and work with you, but like, why me?" And he was just like, "I fuck with you. Like, I love meeting like what y'all don't know is someone new stepping into the scene. It feels it's like it's undescribable, indescribable, whatever the word is to." Be embraced by people who have already made it in your lane, like people who you aspire to be like. So
you know it is that the same way you feel about us.
It's vice versa.
Yeah, when I came in, it was people like James Brown, Ron Ivey, mm-hmm. Roger Troutman. These are people that embrace me. George mm-hmm. Clinton, Bootsy Collins. Mm-hmm. They like embrace me mm-hmm. the way we embrace mm-hmm. you. And it was strange to me because it's like I grew up off of that music.
Man,
and
what?
I'm trying to be them, and then all of a sudden they know who I am.
Yeah. That be like a real full circle moment, like mind blowing, where you gotta like damn near pinch yourself, like it is really happening.
Look, I sat down with James Brown for about 3 hours. Right?
Crazy.
So James Brown is telling me, this is like maybe 20 years ago. He telling me, Snoopy, you gonna be the hardest working man in show business. You gonna be this. You gonna. He just telling me all the shit I'm mm-hmm. listening to. The most important shit he said to me was he said, Snoopy,
Your hair is your scrap.
Yeah.
Whatever you, don't you ever cut your hair.
Yeah, that's you.
This what James Brown, uh-huh. He telling me as long as your hair grow, as long as you're going to be in this game.
Yeah.
But he telling me this shit, I'm listening to him talking, I can't figure it out.
Yeah.
While he's saying it, but as he passed away, and I see me become the hardest working man in the show business, and doing all the great things that he said I would be doing with the kids, with positive mm-hmm. work, with creating opportunities, mm-hmm. branding, marketing, all this shit mm-hmm. that he said. It's like I was touched because he embraced me, just mm-hmm. like I'm embracing you. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just me. Like, I be seeing you embrace people, and that shit mean the world to us. Like, when you coming in, especially, like, now it don't be, at least from my perspective, it don't be the same. Like, where everybody just, like, open arms. So that type shit, that be real motivation to come into somebody else's world. And they like, yeah, you doing your thing. I know you. Motherfucker be acting like they don't know who you is, or they don't know your song, whatever. That shit alone, you singing my song, rock my world.
But that's what you did. You put that work in. You mm-hmm. made it that good to where I had to check.
Once and one day, I hope to have longevity like you.
Your hair growing.
Hey, Batman, yeah. I ain't coming. Yeah, ain't coming.
Let it ride.
And that's our show. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, subscribe to Rolling Stone Music Now wherever you get your podcasts. And please leave us 5 stars and a nice review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, because that's always appreciated. But as always, thanks so much for listening, and we will see you next week.